everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. Bart Scott is joining us this morning. Good morning. I'll wait till you take it out. What are you looking for?
I love the colors, man.
Oh, thank you.
This bright.
I appreciate
that.
That's how you start me off on the right foot. I like what you're wearing, Nick.
Thanks, Jenna.
That wasn't as well received as mine was. Hey, things are really shaking up in the NFL. Some good football to cap off this holiday weekend. And with that, why don't we dive right in, kick off 3 hours of sports with the reigning Super Bowl champs, who did not play like the reigning Super Bowl champs. Brady and the Patriots facing the Texans. Pick this up, 2 minutes left in the first. Tom Brady looking for rookie wideout N'Keal Harry. Picked off by Bradley Roby. Frustrating first half for TB12. He let his offense know it. Trying to get them going, trying to get himself going as well. And you know what never helps with that? This. Texans up 21-9 in the fourth. Trick play, DeAndre Hopkins to Deshaun Watson, scoring his fourth touchdown of the game. Watson had an amazing day, posting a passer rating of 140.7. A minute left. Pats go for the onside kick. They are unable to recover. Bill O'Brien will get his first win over his former head coach. Patriots drop to the 2 seed with the loss. Here's Tom Brady after the game.
We're battling. We're trying as hard as we can. And, you know, hopefully we can make enough plays and, you know, be the best we could be. It doesn't all remains to be seen. So, you know, you can make a bunch of predictions and so forth. But that's not what it's about. It's about going out there and doing it. And, you know, a lot of guys made some plays tonight and try to build on it and see if we can do better next week.
All right, there's a lot to get to in this one. Nick, was last night more about the Patriots being bad, or was it about what you saw from the Texans being great?
Well, I want to give the Texans full credit. That was a great win for this year's team and a great win for the organization. Never been able to beat Tom Brady and the Patriots. Bill O'Brien never been able to beat the guy he learned underneath. The Texans have had their seasons ended, either de facto ended in the regular season or actually ended in the postseason by the Patriots a number of times. They played great. That was a crowd that had a lot of Patriot fans travel to Houston, or, you know, transplants that live in Houston that came and gave it. It was about 60-40 in the crowd, so the Texans barely had a home field advantage, and they still not only found a way to win, but dominated that game. So I want to give the Texans full and total credit. With that said, the bigger story to me is how the Patriots looked for 3 quarters. That the Patriots, at one point impenetrable defense, all of a sudden the last month now, giving up 21 points per game. Now, that's good, but that's not the historically great pace we saw this team on through the first 2 months of the season. And the elephant in every room about the Patriot conversation is not an elephant. It's actually a goat. It's the goat, Tom Brady, who is not any good. Let me be careful with what I'm saying here. I almost said he's not any good anymore. He's certainly not any good right now. And the only way you could believe he's going to be good again is if he does have some magical GOAT quotient to go to that he is waiting until the last possible moment to activate. But they could have used it last night. They could have used it against Baltimore. As of this morning, the playoffs do not go through Gillette. And I know everyone's going to blame everyone but Brady. They're going to today Belichick's going to catch some heat, which he never does. The receivers are obviously going to catch some heat. Tom Brady, in the first 7 drives of this football game, had a 30 passer rating, 3.6 yards per pass, and had thrown for 90 yards. At the end of the game, his numbers looked okay because he had multiple garbage time possessions, Bart, because they were so bad early. But this Patriot passing attack is in utter disarray, and it's partially on the receivers, but it's mostly on that guy yelling at the receivers right there, Tom Brady.
And you look at what's happening and what they struggle against, that defense, right? Because this team is built around the defense. They tried to muddy the waters up a little bit by being physical with Houston, who has a defense that's trying to improve, but it struggles in stopping a run. So you saw some vintage New England, like we saw last year in the playoffs, trying to ground and pound it and try and beat them down, limit the possession.
And that was effective, by the way. They could run the ball.
Right, but what happened is when they went down on that first drive and only got 3, then that messed up the a la carte, right? Because what happened is the Patriots' game plan is to play from ahead, get you down two possessions, make you one-dimensional, and then they're able to take advantage. The problem is, and what they're going to struggle with, is their defense gets exposed with against teams that have multiple fast players, elite players, because they can't, they can only double so many. And I think Hopkins solidified himself as one of the best receivers in the game, because that was a battle, right? We were disappointed in the battle between Gilmore and Cooper a couple of weeks ago because Cooper didn't find a way to make a play for his quarterback. It looked like Deshaun Watson, really, the game is slowing down. He's understanding how he's being played. The Patriots came out and tried to go in there in a non-traditional what they've been doing, right, because they're a game plan specific type of defense, and they were going zone. Right, so they were going zone, and Deshaun Watson was figuring out when they were in zone. They were going cover zero, which they killed everybody in cover zero. They played cover zero against the Jets almost the whole game,
yep,
and forced you to find the open man. Well, because they have so much elite speed, because they have steals and they have Fuller, they're able to be able to run away from guys when you don't put a defender in the middle of the field. So those were the answers, and it was great watching Deshaun Watson communicate with his teammates on the sideline, saying, hey, this is what we're getting. And also Duke Johnson, because the biggest, I feel, weakness is their linebackers in coverage. And we saw that against the Ravens, but yep, it was just the tight ends were able to expose the linebackers. Yesterday, it was Duke Johnson able to expose Hightower, Van Noy, and Deshaun Watson knew exactly where to go with the football. So I think it's more about what the problems that a team like the Houston Texans, the Baltimore Ravens, also next week, the Kansas City Chiefs,
well, that's what I was
with elite speed, putting those guys in the slot where it's harder to double those guys in the slot. And the Patriots are always going to make you fight left-handed, right? And so they tried to, their game plan was to take away Hopkins, but what happened is the other guys stepped up and really exposed the lack of team speed on the defensive side of the ball of the Patriots.
Look, there are a lot of people who thought that despite the way that this offense rather has been playing the last couple of weeks, despite the way Brady has been playing short all year, they were still a lock to make it to the Super Bowl because somehow, some way, that's what the Patriots do. After what you saw last night, your doubt, Nick, that this team could return to the Super Bowl, is it as high as it's been all season?
Well, there's four teams in the AFC that are clearly the top four teams in the conference. Yeah. No disrespect to the Buffalo Bills, who are having a hell of a season. And by the way, Buffalo actually controls their own destiny for the one seed.
Amazing.
Because they get Baltimore.
Amazing.
And then they get New England again. So that's a credit to what they've done. But you look at those four teams. Kansas City beat Baltimore, lost to Houston, I believe is going to go beat the Patriots. Houston lost to Baltimore, beat New England. Baltimore obviously beat Houston, lost to Kansas City, beat New England. Houston, the Patriots are a week away from being 0-3 against the three other teams in the conference that matter. You are going to have to beat at least one, if not both of those, or at least two of those three teams.
Old guy like Brady needs to buy.
To make the Super Bowl. Now, I do think they're still going to get the bye. I don't think Houston or Kansas City is going to catch them in that regard. But in that first playoff game, if you're the two seed, you're staring at Kansas City or Houston. If you get through it, you are then going to Baltimore if you are the two seed. And I know that, I already know that the narrative today is going to be that the Patriots don't have enough weapons. The Patriots spent a first round pick on a running back, then a first round pick on a wide receiver, then traded a second round pick for a wide receiver. All of that has happened in the last 18 months. There are a lot of teams in the league whose quarterbacks would love for them to have that type of investment on skill position guys. Meanwhile, you still have national broadcasters arguing Julian Edelman is potentially a Hall of Famer.
Right.
So you've got a guy, now I understand he's older, but an 11-year vet who is, to some people's minds, a Hall of Fame player. You've got two first-round picks and a player you traded a second-round pick for. The problem is, last night was maybe the best game a 42-year-old quarterback has ever played, and it was a bad game because guys his age are not supposed to be good anymore. And if what you're saying about the defense is accurate, I have no reason to believe it's not, Bart, which is there is a kryptonite to them, and it is overall team speed. Well, then the teams they have to go through to get to the Super Bowl, the Ravens have speed and a very unique offense. The Texans have a ton of speed, and nobody's got more speed than the Kansas City Chiefs.
And you look at the field goal, you know, Forbath missing the field goal, putting behind the sticks. Now, we know Nick Folk may come back. But listen, their path to the Super Bowl, especially, you know, we know what it is if they don't host throughout. You know, they've never made a Super Bowl when they had to go on the road at any point. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think they pick up the call. pick up the phone, swallow their pride, and they go AB, honey.
No shot.
Because they have to understand that they don't have the tools that they need to be able to be successful and beat a legitimate team. Not a team with one side of the ball, but the teams they're going to struggle against are right in front of them. There's three of them in their conference.
Well, Jenna says no shot. Peter King this morning said he agrees with you, that he thinks Bill Belichick is going to lobby Robert Kraft to allow them to do that exact thing. I don't know if that'll happen, but they need something. And that's the last card.
Because teams are doubling Edelman, and Brady doesn't know where to go with the ball, and the guys just dump on offs, the outside don't know where to go.
Dump offs to James White if Edelman's doubled. But that's all they've got.
And the interception was because, you know, Neil gave up on the route and got cut out in front, and you can never stop your route, but that's a rookie making a rookie mistake.
The one other thing you mentioned quickly before we move on, the kicking game has really hampered them this season, and it never hampered them before. It's not a sexy thing to talk about, but at the end of the game, it actually was a factor. Time now for Put a Grade on It, sponsored by CarMax. Deshaun Watson scored 4 total touchdowns against the Patriots yesterday. Gives the Texans their first win over New England since 2010. Nick, put a grade on Deshaun Watson's night.
Quick and easy, A+. He was sensational. And he had a very funny quote after the game. He said, "I wanted to make sure I beat Brady once before he hung it up." Ooh. So maybe Deshaun's seeing some writing on the wall as well.
Maybe he wanted to try and retire him. I'm going to give him an A as well, because he had the Da Vinci Code yesterday. He was finding all the answers, and the game is finally slowing down for him. I'm happy for him.
Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future, or visit www.pacificlife.com. All right, Browns and Steelers in a rematch of that ugly meeting 2 weeks ago. Cleveland jumped out to a 10-0 lead and then sputtered. Baker Mayfield struggled again, 18 of 32 for 196 yards with a touchdown and 2 turnovers. Steelers win 20-13. Sorry, Baker. Cleveland now 5-7 with playoff hopes all but gone. But the story this game turned to something that happened off the field. Friday night, head coach Freddie Kitchens decided to wear a T-shirt that said Pittsburgh started it in reference to their brawl. Glad he doesn't want any distractions on his team. He was asked about the shirt after the loss.
I mean, listen, the T-shirt didn't have anything to do with us at the minus one moving out. I wore a T-shirt. I wore a jacket with it. My daughters wanted me to wear the shirt, and I'd wear it again. I'd put a jacket on. I covered it up. I took a picture with a fan. That was as simple as that, you know. T-shirt didn't cause us to give up 40-yard passes, and we were ready to play. That's the only thing people need to be concerned about. We were ready to play.
The truth is, the T-shirt in and of itself isn't the worst thing. The T-shirt is one of many things that has seemingly gone wrong for this team. Nick, what did you make of Freddie Kitchens' comments after the game?
Well, he's 100% right that the T-shirt had nothing to do with what happened on Sunday. And the idea that, well, it gave the Steelers extra motivation. Man, 2 weeks ago, first of all, these teams are long-term rivals. Second of all, there was enormous playoff implications on the line. Third of all, 2 weeks ago, these two teams played, and one guy on the Browns bonked the quarterback on the Steelers on the head with his helmet. So, like, they were going to be at peak motivation for all of these reasons, no matter what. So the T-shirt had nothing to do with it. But that doesn't mean it's anything other than an idiotic decision. It's indefensible, and it's indicative of why the Browns are one of the very most disappointing underachieving teams in the league, and a team whose most important player, the one we saw at the very end, has had two enormous issues all year. One has been about ball security and just turning the ball over. Yep. That's on the field. And the other is off the field, which is taking accountability. Because the head coach doesn't want to take accountability. Bart, I'm sure your kids have gotten you either presents or shirts or Absolutely. Something that And I'm not as a public person as you are, but my daughters poke fun at me about the LeBron stuff because even at their age, they know this is something I poke fun at about. So I get almost every Christmas some LeBron versus Jordan clothing item. And I rarely get asked for pictures, but I'm not wearing that out of the house because of this exact concern.
Yeah.
And Freddie's saying my daughters gave it to me. Hey, bro, I saw the picture. You could have just left the jacket zipped all the way up. You know you're going to ask for pictures.
Close your jacket then.
You know this is coming. And this strikes me, someone, Bart, that doesn't still fully understand the gravity of the position that they hold.
Yes.
Doesn't understand the importance of everything that goes along with being the face of a multi-billion dollar organization, corporation, however you want to put it, because that is what he is. It's not the apples to apples, but it's Elon Musk smoking weed on the radio. It's like, it's not actually affecting the cars, but it's a terrible look for the face of your organization. And it shows me that your "does he get it" quotient is still wildly lacking.
He's in over his head. He's been over his head all year. And the reason that he's the head coach of this football team is because Baker liked him. But he's a negative influence on him. And listen, you have to understand that when you're the head coach of a team, you're the CEO of that team. You're the voice of that team. You're reporting to the stock owners of that team. And you're sending a negative message. And was it fuel to the fire? Of course it was. Athletes are going to use anything for bulletin board material. Did it affect the outcome of the game? Maybe not. But then it's going to affect the team going forward because now it's the topic of conversation that your players are going to have to answer questions for. Your quarterback's going to have to answer questions for. And I don't need my head coach being the distraction.
It's insane.
I don't need my head coach being on the back pages because we're not talking about the X's and O's. We're not talking about Baker and his turnovers. We're not talking about why you have a team that arguably has the best roster in football and they're underachieving. See, the Browns made a bad decision last year in deciding to go with Freddie Kitchens because he liked Baker Mayfield. You needed to hire the other coordinator who's showing that he can do more with less. Yeah, I know, understand that he has a stain on his record because of Bounty Gate. But if you understand what Greg Williams is doing, doing in New York with a team that's on their third and fourth cornerback, that's on their seventh and eighth linebacker, has them in the top five in defense. Here you are. You have great pass rushers, great corners, first rounders all over the place, and they're underachieving because they have a lack of discipline. They have a lack of accountability to themselves, not just the head coach in the organization. They don't have any accountability to themselves, and they're punching underneath their weight, not punching above their weight, and that falls right at the table of the head coach.
And somehow, some way, they had run three games in a row. So despite all of that, they were actually trending upwards. Baker was actually playing a little bit better, especially coming off that really ugly mess 2 weeks ago. And then you look at what happened yesterday, and it was all back to the same thing. It was play calling. It was penalties. It was a lack of third down discipline. It was just all around futility. Why do you think the Browns lost the game yesterday?
It looked like you want to say something.
Because I'm going to need my franchise quarterback to be able to beat a third string duck man off the bench. I'm going to need him to outplay him. And if you can't outplay the third man, this is the best coaching job I've seen Mike Tomlin. This best
he's coaching
coach job.
Nothing.
He's coaching.
No
his
Juju
guys
yesterday.
Up.
No James Conner yesterday.
That's what good coaches do. And Freddie Kitchens may just be in over his head, and he may not have an opportunity to right the ship because we know they have a quick trigger finger in Cleveland.
And this is something, Jenna, to answer your question. The three most disappointing teams that are relevant teams in the NFL this year are the Browns, the Cowboys, and Philadelphia.
Yep.
And this is going to be a theme of some of my commentary today on the show. All three of those teams were in a not must-win, but close, damn close. The Browns was a must-win game.
Sure.
And all three of them started off great. Dallas was up 7-0 on Buffalo before it all fell apart.
Which they never do.
Philly was up 10-0 and then 28-14 before it all fell apart. Cleveland was up 10-0 in this football game. 10-0 on a third-string quarterback who you now are in the best possible position because Pittsburgh does have a good defense. But if you can all of a sudden get out to an early lead and force them to become one-dimensional. And then all three of those teams, The better coached opposition punched back and they folded. And the most disappointing thing, aside from Freddie Kitchens' nonsense, because Freddie Kitchens won't be there next year, Baker will be, is they were down 20-13 and Duck Hodges threw a pick. And you had an opportunity then and there to all of a sudden make your stand. Not that dissimilar from opportunities they had early in the year, in whether it was the Rams game or games early in the year where they had multiple opportunities even though they hadn't played well. And what did Baker do? Three and out for -8 yards. You get the ball back. He completes one pass for 5 yards and throws an interception. Now, I know he hurt his hand at the end of the first half, and he didn't look like the exact same guy after that. But the problem for the Browns is, it is one thing to be a front-running team if you're constantly ahead. The team that I root for, the Chiefs, who I know we're going to talk about, they're a bit of front-runners. When things are going good for Kansas City, they look amazing. But they're ahead a lot, and so it can work out for them. When you're a team trying to establish yourself, if you're a front-running team and you don't have a come-from-behind gear, it's going to look like that. And so, to me, the Freddie Kitchens stuff is the bigger story this week. The Baker stuff is the bigger story moving forward, because Baker's going to be there, Bart, for a long time. They certainly hope so. Freddie Kitchens is going to be there for another month, and then he's going to, I'd say, be an offensive coordinator again, but he was a running backs coach. His most recent full-time job before this one. So that's the more long-lasting concern for Cleveland.
And so Baker Mayfield will once again have to get used to another coach going into next season. All right, moving on to Carson Wentz and the Eagles in Miami to face the Dolphins. Second quarter, fourth down. Dolphins line up in a funky formation on the one.
Gate. It's called the swinging gate, Gina.
Field goal attempt. Kicker Jason Sanders catches the touchdown on the true play. What is it called?
The swinging gate.
Swinging gate.
You can find it in Football for Dummies 101.
Miami takes the 14-13 lead fourth quarter. Dolphins up 6. The Eagles went for that Hail Mary. It was anyone's ball. Dolphins say, it was ours. Wentz picked off. Eagles fall to 5-7 on the season, despite 3 touchdowns from Carson Wentz. Here's head coach Doug Peterson after the game.
As crazy as this is, I mean, I would say it's a long shot, but we're not out of it. We do have 4, you know, of our division opponents coming up, and you know, the guys got to understand that, and it's my job to make sure they do understand that we're still fighting and coming to work this week and ready to go and you know, try to figure this thing out. In my position, I've got to make sure that the team understands that you know, we got to guard against that, and we're still a good football team. And again, listen, it's about what we do.
Right now, the title in the NFC East is like hot potato. No one seemingly wants it. The Eagles had a chance with Cowboys losing. They couldn't cap on it. What has gone so wrong for this Philadelphia team, Nick?
Well, everything at this point, and I take issue with what Doug Peterson said there. I don't know if people caught it at the very end. He said, we're still a good football team. Compared to who? What's your evidence?
The division.
But even compared to your division, you're looking up at a Cowboys team that is playing its worst football of the year right now. In your conference, the complete list of teams with worse records than the Philadelphia Eagles: Washington, the Giants, the Lions, the Falcons, and the Arizona Cardinals. That's it. Yesterday's loss cannot happen if you have any hope of not only being a playoff team. You're going to get to host a playoff game. It's going to be a ton of fun when we get to watch an 8-8 NFC East team host a 12-4 wild card team. It's going to be outrageous, but that's what we're staring at. You're up 10-0 immediately against the Miami Dolphins. They claw back in it. You're then up 28-14 in the second half, and you let the Fighting Fitzpatrick score 23 straight? You got to be kidding me. It wasn't a game where all of kick return touchdown. We have a blocked kick. Carson Wentz has 4 fumbles. No, your defense just folded up shop in a game. You saw on Thanksgiving the Cowboys lose. You know your schedule. You know it's all in front of you. You know what I know, which is you're going to get a home playoff game. You win the division, whether you deserve it or not. Right. And to blow a 14-point second-half lead to these Miami Dolphins in a critical game cannot happen if you're an average football team, much less the good football team Doug Peterson claims they are.
Can I put that on a T-shirt, Defining Fitzpatrick's?
Yeah, no, yeah, you can have it.
I love Brian Flores, who has this team playing amazing. You know, we laughed at the Dolphins early in the season, but they were in a lot of tough games early on, and they're learning how to finish games. You know, Devontae Parker, who was thought of as a cast-off, really has made some big plays. But I think this is more about Philadelphia and their lack of a killer instinct. I feel like ever since they got that title, we know we've heard reports that, you know, that they've been, didn't Orlando Scandrick say that? Mm-hmm. That we're going to have on the show later, yeah, said that, you know, they're still celebrating and living off of that Super Bowl because in that city, it's the first one. They don't seem like a hungry team. They don't seem like a team that's got a lot of grit to it anymore. It used to be like that, playing the underdog role, but now when they're the favorite, they don't come with that same fight, that same energy, and it's really starting to show. How can you, two teams that would disappoint you, say Cleveland and Philadelphia, understanding what you have ahead of you, you can't lose to the Miami
Both
Dolphins.
Both up double digits in their games.
Right, because that tells me that you take the foot off the gas and you get conservative and you can't find a way to finish games against a team that you could have stepped on their throats. I mean, I don't understand. 8-8 probably will win this division. And the only good thing, the silver lining, why Doug is saying, hey, I got to get the troops and let them know where we're at, that was the AFC opponent. Now they have all the opponents in their division, and they face the Dallas Cowboys. If they're able to win out against the Giants, against Washington twice, I mean, the Giants twice, Washington, Dallas, then that gives them a better NFC.
Of course. No, they can still win the division, Bart, but the problem is when we talked about Philadelphia and that they were in such an advantageous position, even though they were trailing the Cowboys, it was because in addition to the Giants and Washington, they had the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Like, if you can allow 23 unanswered to Miami, you are not a lock against anyone. You're not a lock against Danny Fumbles. You're not a lock against Dwayne Haskins. You're certainly not a lock against the Cowboys, that Jekyll and Hyde team. Like, this Eagles team has no excuse for yesterday. Yeah. You want to say the reason that their season's gone awry was they lost their speed at the wide receiver position. How many points they score? Scored 31 points yesterday. That's got to be
more than enough to win,
to beat the Miami Dolphins.
The problems that they're inflicting them now are the same things earlier on in the season. The roster, leadership in that locker room, and then the shaky play of Carson Wentz, who, by the way, yesterday actually played well enough to win the game. Exactly.
If you are up 28-14 on the Miami Dolphins in week 13 with a chance to tie for the division,
gotta win,
and you don't finish it, then everyone has to wear that, yeah, from the head coach on down.
Let's move on to the biggest game on the schedule yesterday. 49ers and Ravens picked this up in the second quarter. Lamar Jackson and his ability to run picks up his second touchdown of the day. He had 101 rushing yards in this game. Lamar would lead the Ravens down the field to give Justin Tucker a chance to win the game with the score tied at 17. Tucker nails the 49-yarder to make the 49ers go away. As Bart would say, night, night.
Night,
give
night.
You a chance.
It's a long flight home, too. That's a long flight home when you lose a tough matchup.
Ravens are now the one seed in the AFC. Here's the Tucker after the game.
I feel like in the spirit of my teammates who have been up here to talk to you guys the last few weeks, I should say something like real inspiring, like big trust. And I'll open it up for questions.
That's great. Yep. That's great. Nick, are the Ravens the best team in the NFL after what they did to the 49ers yesterday?
Well, that's certainly the best kicker in the NFL and one of the most valuable special teams players I've ever seen. And for a team that plays the style they play, it is so critical to have a kicker like him.
Yeah.
And he's been awesome for years and years. But to answer your question, Jenna, they're certainly playing like it right now because I didn't think they played great yesterday.
Not at all.
I didn't think Lamar threw the ball well. I understand the conditions were really tough. I thought San Francisco's game plan was incredibly sound. San Francisco ran all over them. Jimmy G had the bad fumble early, the fumble that you almost saw coming if you're watching. You're like, just get down, man. Right, like, right. You see people coming, but he didn't throw the ball to Baltimore. And San Francisco made a few key fourth downs. They missed the fourth down late in the game. That was the last time they touched the football. But here's right now why Baltimore has the argument that they're the best team in the NFL. They have an extra down that the rest of the league is not utilizing. They are in, I'm not a good golfer.
Analytics.
Right, I'm not a good golfer, but if you're just an average golfer and you're going up against a good golfer and they give you a shot a hole, you're going to win. If everyone else has three plays to get 10 yards and these guys got four, which is how they are running their team, they are at such a strategic advantage. And then you add to it, everyone else feels good about field goals, getting 3 points once they get inside the 30. And Baltimore feels great about it once they get to the 35. They basically start every game up six. Like, we're going to get an extra field goal that you're not going to get. We're going to get an extra possession that you're not going to get because we're going to go for it on these fourth downs. And that right now, in addition to how difficult Lamar is to defend, because even in the game where he didn't play that well, he still had 100 passing, 100 rushing. All of those things, to me, make them the toughest team to plan for week in, week out.
I mean, they're tough to plan for, but some of these teams that they're going to play in the playoffs are going to see them for the second time, and they see the recipe to try and defeat them is to run the ball, keep them on the sideline, and try and get up, because even though this offense is averaging, I believe, first in scoring and number one over 200 yards rushing, it still isn't a one-shot big fast hitting. You know, you
saw
some
quick strike.
You saw some of those drives, you know, scoring drives of 7 minutes, 8 minutes. So if you get them behind against a team like Kansas City, then you have to come out of your game plan. And I still don't know if Lamar has proven that. For me, I think the best team playing right now has to be the New Orleans Saints because they're the most complete team.
Well, and you mentioned the outside passing game, Bart. That was, again, I'm not going to hold yesterday against them because the conditions
the
were tough.
Were horrible.
And they were able to get the win. But you do, I know the Ravens have this three tight end offense and they built it for Lamar. You are going to, right now, while they might be playing with an extra down, they're also playing with about 10 yards less width of field. Like, they're playing almost everything.
In between the hashes.
In between the hashes.
They don't throw a lot outside the numbers.
And Lamar's going to have to improve at least slightly in that regard moving forward, because I think there will be a team in the postseason that does a better job of taking that stuff away. But San Francisco, if you'd have told San Francisco you're going to hold them to 20, you're going to rush for about a buck 80. Jimmy G's going to have one turnover. They'd probably take all those things.
Being on the East Coast with that kind of weather.
The elbow to Peters. Peters had his worst game as a Raven. I think he didn't tackle well, and he got in his own head. He may be too hyped up or something, but this Achilles heel for the Ravens, every team has a kryptonite, and I think the run defense against the Ravens is really something that they're going to have to address. They try to address by bringing in Pecco. It really hasn't happened because they play so much with small personnel on defense that you have to blitz, and if they're not going to make tackles and the team is able to punch them in the face, it could be a problem.
But when you're the Ravens and you don't play even close to your best game, and you beat the team that went into the game with the best record in football, it shows you how good you can be. By the end of tonight, by the way, San Francisco might have been 36 hours going from best record in football to the five seed.
All right, Baltimore Ravens now 10-2, riding a franchise best 8-game win streak with a win over the San Francisco 49ers. Back here on First Things First, we're now joined by former NFL head coach Eric Mangini. Good morning, Eric.
What up, coach?
Good weekend.
Got that old bay out of your skin yet? Eating all them crab legs?
Oh, you're down in Baltimore.
Got a little stomach virus this weekend.
Oh.
Then I have to come back in and listen to Nick.
Nick. So you have two stomach
Kansas
viruses.
City and New England loss.
It's like, it's great.
Second Thanksgiving.
Great day in America today.
Awesome. All right, well, let's talk about one of those topics right now. Sunday night football. Okay. Here we go. Re-rack the tape. Tom Brady and the Patriots facing the Texans. Pick it up. 2 minutes left in the first. Brady looking for rookie wideout. N'Keal Harry picked off by Bradley Roby. A frustrating first half for TB12, and he let his offense know it, trying to get him going, trying to get himself going as well. Come on, let's pick this up. You know
faster.
What never helps? This never helps. Texans up 21-9 in the fourth. Trick play. DeAndre Hopkins to Deshaun Watson to score his fourth touchdown of the game. Did you say poor pass? Mm-hmm. Watson had an amazing day, posting a passer rating of 140.7. Minute left. Pats go for an onside kick. They're unable to recover it. And Bill O'Brien will get his first win over his former head coach. Patriots drop to the 2 seed with the loss. Here's Tom Brady after the game.
We're battling, we're trying as hard as we can, and, you know, hopefully we can make enough plays and, you know, be the best we could be. All remains to be seen. So, you know, you can make a bunch of predictions and so forth, but that's not what it's about. It's about going out there and doing it. And, you know, a lot of guys made some plays tonight, and try to build on it and see if we can do better next week.
All right, Nick, how much are you now doubting the Patriots' Super Bowl hopes?
Oh, look, about as much I've been doubting them the last few months, and I think people are starting to see it. There are five teams in the AFC we know are going to be in the playoffs. Patriots are one of them. Baltimore's another one. Baltimore whooped them. Houston's another one. Houston was up three scores in that game until it was garbage time. Buffalo's another one of them. Buffalo, they needed a blocked punt touchdown to beat. And the other one's Kansas City, who's going to beat them next week. So the Patriots had an all-time great pass defense, statistically speaking, through the first 8 weeks of the season. The last month of the year, it's been a very good pass defense, but not a great pass defense, despite what they did to the Dallas Cowboys and Amari Cooper in that driving rainstorm. The Houston Texans did what they wanted to do through the air against New England yesterday, and that historically good pass defense coach was offsetting what was a very poor passing offense for New England. And despite the final numbers that make it look like, oh, Brady had a bounce back game, he did not. Through three quarters, Tom Brady was awful. You see him yelling at the receivers, getting frustrated at the receivers. I understand that for that interception, N'Keal Harry should have fought for the ball more. But Brady was, unless guys were running not only the wrong routes, but running the wrong routes at the wrong speed to the wrong part of the field, Brady was missing a lot of people by a large distance. Was that a bad route, or is that a throw out the back of the end zone? I don't know. And so there's the Patriots, their passing game issues were being kind of covered up a bit by a great, great defense. And if this defense turns into an all-time great defense statistically to a very good one, then they cannot beat the best teams in football. And you saw that yesterday.
When you look at this team throughout the course of the season, the defensive stats were really deceptive because the teams they were playing early on struggled is kind for what they were offensively. So that gave you a unfair depiction of how good they were. I've said this over and over, the offensive line problems that they have are real and they're not going away. And getting Isaiah Wynn back has helped, but again, last night they lose their second center, okay, who's actually the guy who's been able to play every single game, and now we've got another substitute in there. A lot of young receivers. N'Keal Harry should have done more on that route, and I'm sure that his frustration is real in terms of guys getting to the right spot. Mohamed Sanu, he's new. N'Keal Harry, he's essentially new. Now, can those guys continue to improve? Yeah, and I thought that Houston did a good job of doubling Julian Edelman, although that wasn't perfect throughout the course of the game, and then paying a lot of attention to James White, taking away their two greatest strengths. But everybody wants to write New England's obituary. Everybody wants to say that New England's done. But look at last night's game. They had a chance to recover an onside kick and win the game as with as many challenges as they had throughout the course of the game. That, to me, is amazing in itself. Put the fact that half the team was sick. The team went on a separate plane because people missed significant amount of practice time due to a massive bug that went through the facility. Like it's amazing what they were able to do, and everybody wants to write them off because of him, Tom, not playing up to his ability. But the challenges that he's had to overcome, very few people could at this point in the season.
But Tom hasn't played well all year, and this offense has been missing something all year. And they've been getting away with smoke and mirrors. I think they've been getting away with the fact that people are intimidated, especially when they have to go up to Gillette Stadium. You know, I felt like the Cowboys missed a massive opportunity to go up there and win a game because they were out-coached, right? You think about all the big plays that they've had, the defense really winning the field position, setting them up in favorable matchups, yes. Scoring. You know, they got three punt block kicks. They've come up with the big plays when they needed to just because they're so well coached. But when they go against a team that has superior talent, when they go against teams that has tremendous team speed, now it gives them problems because they're good at making you go to plan B. But when you have a plan B and a plan C like Houston has, because they can go to Stills, who has some huge catches and cover zero coverage. When you look at Will Fuller, when he's healthy, what he can do, and DeAndre Hopkins is never going to be shut out like Cooper was. I think it really presents some tremendous obstacles for that defense that doesn't have great team speed at the linebacker position. So what did they do? Deshaun Watson recognized that, hey, we better be ready for a cover zero blitz. And New England always comes out with something that you've never seen before. before, and it was zone. But then Hopkins and all the receivers did a great job in sitting in the zones. So then when they came with the cover zero, they were prepared for it. You can tell they had a plan for it. And it was over routes because they knew the middle of the field was open, and they knew they had tremendous speed that even though they have some, you know, some slot guys that can run, you think about Gilmore, you think about, forget 31's number, you know, he's 4-3, but 4-3 against 4-3 running in the cover zero is going to lose. And Duke Johnson and how he exposed those linebackers in pass coverage, Van Noy one time, Hightower, the same thing that the Ravens did, I think is going to be the game plan moving forward. But can every team do it? No. You have to have three or four fast guys, and Kansas City has three or four fast guys. Does this mean that New England can't win? Of course it doesn't mean that they can't win. It means that the degree of difficulty, and they shouldn't be the favorite going in, especially if they're not hosting the playoffs through Gillette Stadium.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And one point, the ability to expose the linebackers and the speed of the linebackers. And you saw that New England's defense had to go off on the sidelines and talk about things that the Texans were doing. That's something that I say every week. You've got to take the initiative away from that defense and force them to react to you. And I thought the Texans did a nice job with that. And they should do a great job with that. You figure that Houston has Brad Seeley, the special teams coach who was in New England for a long time, Romeo Crennel, the defensive coordinator, they have their former offense coordinator. In terms of inside information, that's the team that's poised the most to exploit what New England does. I would have thought that based off of the week of preparation, the challenges New England had, the advantages that the Texans had, this would have been even worse than it was last night.
Well, Coach, but it was awful.
Yeah.
It was 28-9 with 5 minutes left. It's 28-9, and Tom Brady's got a 59 passer rating and 5.5 yards per pass. Like, I understand that. Listen, once the
and
Texans
it ends
win,
up 28-22 yeah, with a chance for them to recover an onside kick
onside,
and go win the game.
Onside kicks, which prior to getting changing all the stats for the league because they recovered twice on Thanksgiving night, there had been one onside kick recovered in this league all year. Right. If you're in today's NFL, if you are in an onside kick game, you have lost. I understand that at the end of the game, it looked like it was competitive.
Right.
It was not. And Tom Brady last night had the single best game a 42-year-old has ever had at the quarterback position.
Which is the 13-yard run.
And he was bad. And I say that to say this. We shouldn't expect better than this from a player at that age, even the greatest to ever do it. And so your point about the playoffs going through Gillette, no longer. Now it looks like they could go through Baltimore. We have seen the Patriots, again, three times this year, against the teams they're going to have to beat. Buffalo, dogfight. Baltimore whooped them. Houston whooped them for 54 minutes, and then the Patriots made it look good late. We'll see how they do against Kansas City. But if speed is an issue,
yeah,
I think Kansas City's a team that could present you with a lot of problems.
Yeah, you're blaming the dad. It's the kids that need to pick it up. It's all the young players in New England that need to do a better job. Look, Tom has limitations. He's had limitations for a long time. But if you get in the right spot and get open, he's going to get you the ball. They need to help him out.
Now, you know this organization better than most. Do you think that Bill, Tom, go to
Robert Kraft
and say, hey, we need AB. Like, it may not be the best thing culture-wise, but we need a player of his caliber because they're taking Julian Edelman away with the brackets, and there's nothing we can do. And they did. I feel like they discovered something later in the game when they moved him out to the number one, knowing that they can get backside cover one on the backside, but they don't have anybody that can
exploit
that.
But do you think they'll do it about AB?
I wouldn't put anything out of the realm of possibility with New England, especially if they think that that it can help them win. It's just AB didn't work out, and what's changed to make us think that suddenly it's going to work out better than that?
What's the chemistry thing, though? Can he produce?
We're going to hold it there because it sounds like Coach was siding with me, and that's always a good place to break. Coach, why don't you just tell me your comments? What do you think about what Freddie Kitchens did?
Okay, and in fairness to Freddie, I'll say that the T-shirt didn't make any plays on the field.
Nope.
It had no effect there. But all they've been trying to do is avoid distractions. All they've been trying, or supposedly, that's been the emphasis in the building, is how are we going to take it away from all the individuals, all the the off the field distractions, the media, the reacting to the media, and do all those things. How are we going to do that and just focus on football? And then to go and wear that T-shirt out on a Friday night in Cleveland. Look, Cleveland's not a big town. It's a small, big city. And people are going to know who the head coach of the football team is. And they're going to know what you're wearing. And they're going to put that out there. So you pretty much know when you put it on that it's going to get out there. And maybe he thought that this would be a positive for his group. Maybe he was saying, hey, I'm all in, I'm with you guys. I had read somewhere that one of the assistant coaches prior to the game told someone in the media, you know, this has been a rivalry, and now the rivalry is over, and we're taking control of the division. So it's all that talking before the game, it's all that other stuff. It doesn't matter, it doesn't help, it's not positive. I don't know why you do it. I don't know what the value is.
It's false bravado. And, you know, for a rivalry to take place, you got to actually win some games first, right? And you have to take something from them. You know, I always thought it was a joke when people would say the Jets and the Patriots was a rivalry. I'm like, they always beat us. How is it a rivalry? You know, the first time when we beat them in the playoffs, that was the first time we took something that they cared about. I mean, I think that Cleveland's under this false impression that, you know, they're the big dogs on the block, that because last year they finished strong, they haven't won anything. This is a front-running football team that as soon as they get punched in the mouth, face adversity, they fold up. And it's reflected in the head coach not taking accountability and understanding that you're the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. And we saw this a little bit with Matt Patricia when he wore the Goodell clown shirt. It almost cost him an opportunity to get a head coaching job.
And at least with that, just quickly, with Patricia, not that I'm trying to make excuses, he did it as a coordinator, not right. as a coach, and departing the plane having won the Super Bowl, not the day before, you know what I mean?
Like, a must-win game.
Right, it's the end of the year, you have won your championship, and he wore a knucklehead shirt. It's very different than in this. And by the way, if he had worn a Pittsburgh Sucks shirt, it would still be, I think, poor form for a head coach. But it's also minimizing to me, one of your guys did something that even if he wasn't the initial instigator, resulted in the longest on-field suspension in the history of the sport. And you are 2 weeks later saying, it wasn't my guy's fault. And so I get your point that maybe he was trying to show the team, I'm putting my arms around
zero
him.
Accountability, Nick. But it's what you've been preaching.
And they see Baker zero accountability after the game.
And it's the lack of accountability is ridiculous. And I want to ask you this question. Because I feel like Freddie Kitchens doesn't understand or grasp all of the things that go with being the face of a multi-billion dollar corporation, which is what all 32 head coaches are. Quarterbacks also to a degree, so maybe co-faces right. of it. And I'm just curious, when you first got your first head coaching job with the Jets, there's a lot of things you've talked to us about that are different than being coordinator. You have to set the meetings. You have to set, everything is your decision. But also the other elements of, I would imagine, like how you represent yourself is so much more important than it was when you were a coordinator. And I don't think he grasps that yet, if that's fair.
The only thing I'll say is, let's say the Browns won yesterday. Would we be sitting here saying, wow, look at how much faith he has in his team. Look at how relatable a guy he is. This is why the team's responding to him. Usually what happens is whoever wins and whoever loses, then the things that are related to him are treated so much more harshly or are not treated as harshly as they should have. Would we be having this discussion if they had won, or would the narrative be he's really found a way to tap into this team's young energy? He's really found a way to relate to his players. And that's the thing that can be a little bit unfair in these discussions, is because of the outcome.
Results-based analysis.
Yeah, suddenly we change dramatically.
Except this was bad taste.
It was
he's the only coach in the league I could see doing this.
Right.
Because that's the other thing, is it would never, if you'd have told me the Chiefs and Raiders got in a brawl earlier this year, and Andy Reid, no, right. Come on.
Like, and this thing, right, we had the rivalry with Pittsburgh, and Terrell Suggs made the F Pittsburgh shirt, and he had the bird, the Raven bird, flipping the bird.
Yep.
And I could, and I never saw Harbaugh ask for one. I never heard Billick ask for one because they knew that's in bad judgment. If you guys want to do that, that's on you guys. But I'm not going to do that because I understand my position. I understand that I'm the face, the representative, the CEO of this company.
And your point, Jen, about the lack of accountability for the team, we're all parents. And we all probably in our day-to-day life tell little white lies like everyone does. Some people more often than others. I don't know about you guys. I try not to do that in front of my kids because if your kids, even if they don't recognize it, see you doing it, you know what I mean? Telling someone, wait, that's not what you were doing last night, Daddy. Then they somehow internalize, well, it's okay for me to tell, right, to tell these little white lies myself. If you're the coach and you are the one that is setting the template for everything, you are letting your team know this type of, whether you want to call it irresponsibility or just knucklehead quotient, however it is, even though I agree, it had nothing to do with their loss, because the Pittsburgh was peak motivation anyway, you are setting the rules of engagement for your team, and they play as such.
And you really want to go out of your way to not make the game ever about you as a head coach. You want to make it about your players. You want to make it about the opponent. You want to set that example. And look, you go out on a Friday night, and I get it. His daughters liked the T-shirt and gave it to him as a gift. But you know you're going to be seen. And you know that someone's going to take a picture. And you know this is going to get out there. You can't. It's not like you're going to be under the radar as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns going out the Friday night before the Pittsburgh game. Someone's going to see you. So it does become a conscious decision.
And you know your jacket has a zipper.
Right, zip it up.
The worst part about all this is that the team was actually in a position where they could have done some good. They had won 3 games in a row. Baker Mayfield has seemingly turned his play around. And they had a lead early on in the game, and it all combusted. You said it earlier on. They don't know how to lose, and they don't know how to win. They don't know how to hold on to a lead either. And it's just been very consistent throughout the whole season for this team. Coach, you want to play a little draw on a blank?
Sure.
Yes.
My favorite segment.
Yesterday, Deshaun Watson was impressive. 3 passing touchdowns and a receiving touchdown in the win over the Patriots. Bart, I'll start with you. The most impressive performance yesterday was blank.
Derrick Henry. I mean, the big man just continues to just start trending in the right direction. Early in his career, we thought he was going to be a bust, but this guy is a grown man. He's starting to run big, and he's fascinating people. He's like a cheat code. He's like Brandon Jacobs was early in his career, but with more speed.
Did he have another buck 50 yesterday thereabouts?
149. Round up 150.
He's what we thought Leonard Fournette was going to be, right? Like the big, powerful, and speed back. He's outstanding.
Yeah, for me, I was going to go with DeVante Parker because I thought his performance was incredible yesterday. But I went with Raheem Mostert. Most carries he's had all season long. Seven, almost 8 yards a carry.
Yeah.
Keeps the 49ers in the game. He's able to keep the Ravens off the sideline or on the sidelines and do some things that I didn't think he could do and I didn't think San Francisco could do in the running game.
I'm going with Deshaun Watson, not only because he caught the touchdown pass in addition to throwing for 3 of them, one of the biggest wins in the young history of the Houston Texans franchise, or I guess near 20-year history, but because of who he was up against. Much like Mostert was so impressive because you're up against the Ravens, even though they ended up losing that game, what he was able to do against that Patriots secondary throughout that football game, and the one bugaboo for Deshaun has been, as brilliant as he is, turns the ball over a little too much. That's what you can't do against New England. He played a clean game. He was exceptional. And his post-game comment of, I wanted to beat Brady once before he hung it up. I like that as well. So I go with Deshaun Watson.
Is that obituary talk?
I don't know.
All right, yesterday, Lamar Jackson was breaking ankles en route to another 100-yard rushing day and an impressive win over the 49ers. But, Bart, the best team win yesterday, team win now, was blank.
Best team win? I have to say the Texans. I mean, because they exercise a lot of demons, right? They have never been able to come up and beat this team. This team has always had their number, no matter J.J. Watt, no J.J. Watt, number one defense, better record. And they finally figured out that, hey, we can beat this team, but we have to be consistent throughout the game. They made winning plays. I mean, really, beating the cover zero blitz, having a plan, whatever the Patriots came up with, they had an answer to. And you have to put it on Bill O'Brien, his coaching staff, for having his team coached up and being able to play a complete game, even though they almost gave it away. way at the end, Coach.
To me, it's the Steelers. And when you go from
yeah.
Big Ben, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, the Hodges, Benny Snell Jr., and Washington, and then and figure out a way to win, and the coaching job that Mike Tomlin's done all season, I think, has been incredibly impressive. But yesterday, to rally the way that they did and play the way that they did and come back the way that they did, I thought was great.
Is Tomlin your coach of the year, Bart? You were saying that before the show.
He is right now. He's my head coach of the year.
He's been unbelievable. I'm going to go with the Ravens for team win because I didn't think Lamar played that brilliantly. I thought he played well, but I thought he missed some guys. Their passing game wasn't that great, but their schematic advantage by understanding the analytics behind fourth downs, and Justin Tucker is one of, as far as his ability versus the next best guy in the league at his position, it might be the biggest spread of any one position in the league.
In NFL history.
And for a team that plays the way the Ravens play, having a great kicker is so important to beat 10-1 San Francisco to now be the one seed in the AFC, at least as of today, in a game where Lamar doesn't play great in those conditions. I thought the Ravens had the most impressive all-around team victory.
Franchise best 8-game win streak for the Baltimore Ravens. On the flip side.
Anything Bart Scott did. Interesting.
Some heartbreaking losses.
We got eight.
That includes the Browns, who dropped to 5-7 with the loss in Pittsburgh. Bart, the most disappointing loss yesterday was blank.
To me, it's the Eagles. I mean, we thought this team had a path to catch the Dallas Cowboys, and they had an opportunity after the Cowboys lost to come back and win. And to lose, not only to lose, but to lose to the Miami Dolphins, I mean, that gives me no confidence that they can beat Washington, that all of a sudden looks like a pretty good football team. They control their old fate, but they've just been a bad team all year. And finally, you know, they've run out, I believe, tricks because they, you know, we've seen them make transactions, get better at the trade deadline this year. No moves to be made. The salary cap is near the top.
Yep.
It's a wrap. Night, night.
For me, it's the Eagles as well. When they have so much ahead of them and Dallas gives them the opportunity that they did and to have a 14-point lead with 4 minutes into 4 minutes into the third quarter against a team that you can say is tanking, but has pretty much traded away most of their young capital. It's incredibly disappointing, and I thought that they would be able to rally because there is some veteran leadership on that team, which you would like to think could take them home.
And because you're not supposed to have to rally if you're up 14 on Miami. Like, that is the rally, and you're supposed to just hold on. I understand entirely what you guys are saying with Philadelphia. The only reason I'm not saying them is despite their loss yesterday, they are still alive to win their division. I'm going to go with the team that was de facto eliminated yesterday, and that's Cleveland. Cleveland also had a double-digit lead. Cleveland also had everything in front of them.
Also had the easiest schedule.
They had a super easy schedule. They could put the nail in Pittsburgh's coffin, essentially. Instead, Pittsburgh, despite all their injuries, despite all the turnover, despite the lack of talent on the offensive side, Pittsburgh's the team that would be in the playoffs out of the wild card team out of the AFC North. So I'd say the Browns, because they're now cooked, finished, done for the year, as much as that delights Jenna Wolf. And so the Browns had the most disappointing loss to me.
All right, moving on to the Kansas City Chiefs, coming off their much-needed bye, hosting the Raiders last night in a pivotal AFC West battle. Mahomes looked good, he looked healthy, and he proved it, scoring two touchdowns, one in the air, one on the ground. He also got plenty of help from his defense, which forced three turnovers. Andy Reid, now 18-3 following a bye in his career. Nick, are some sleeping on Kansas City?
Yeah, listen, if you think Kansas City's not right behind Baltimore,
yeah,
alongside New England and Houston, as far as most likely to make the Super Bowl out of the AFC, then yeah, you're sleeping on them. They are finally healthy.
Yep.
And now Frank Clark left yesterday's game again. We'll see what the shoulder injury was. But they have been ravaged by injuries throughout the year, and nobody cared. Mahomes, they've lost four games this year. One of them was without Patrick Mahomes to Green Bay, and they were in that football game. Doesn't matter. Nope. After the Titans loss, because they had no business losing that football game, that was terrible execution in the final 2 minutes to turn a win into a loss. People wrote them off. They came off a bye yesterday in a game that, had they lost to the Raiders, they would wake up today in eighth place in the AFC. Because of tiebreakers. With a win, they essentially clinched the division because they're now three up on Oakland because of tiebreakers with four to play. So the single most pivotal game of their season, And they're up 38-3 with a minute left before the Raiders score a garbage time touchdown. And most importantly, Bart, Mahomes wasn't even very good yesterday.
Right.
Like, he was bad conditions, it was windy, he missed some guys. He was not very good. And they won the way they did because the defense, for the second straight week, with Chris Jones back, looked far better than it did early in the year. If this Chiefs defense doesn't have to play as well as it did yesterday, but continues just to be average, just be an average defense, then they 100% can go to and win the Super Bowl, and the defense is showing, giving you reason to believe they can do that.
I mean, Spagnuolo's finally getting that defense to really adjust to his style. You remember this, a lot of these guys on this team coming from a 3-4, different type of philosophy, not more of an attacking mode, not a bend-don't break. Now everybody's trying to learn their responsibilities. Chris Jones is solidifying that run defense. But also, we knew that this team, you know, was the favorite in the AFC by a lot of people, you know,
going
in the year as the Super Bowl contender. The problem was that Mahomes was injured. His kneecap went out and he came back, the ankle injury. Now he's starting to get healthy. We know this team is dangerous. This team is explosive. The problem is, and I think the problem that most people have with this team is the fact that they can, that no lead is insurmountable for them. They can score in a blink of an eye. The problem is they can't salt games away, so they can't put teams away, because when you throw the ball and you have incompletions, you can't really, you know, the clock stops. You know, so they don't have that bruiser that can move the chains, that can go on that 7-minute drive. But we know that this team is capable of lighting the scoreboard up and being able to beat any of the teams in the AFC. They've already beaten Baltimore this year in their house.
Is that their only hole on the team that you see right now, the lack of a substantial run game?
Well, I think the run game on both sides of the ball. I think the run defense is a weakness, and I think the run offense, I'm not certain they can't run the ball. I think they don't want to. Like
they don't have the ground and pound bruiser guy like they had before.
They don't have LeGarrette Blount. And listen, Kareem Hunt was a great player that they cut last season. They have not yet totally filled that void. They had another running back go down with an injury yesterday. Yeah. You saw the rookie Darwin Thompson come in and do some good things. But your point about having beat Baltimore, like the four best teams in the AFC, Houston beat Kansas City, beat New England, but lost to Baltimore. Baltimore lost to Kansas City, but beat Houston and New England. Kansas City beat Baltimore, lost to Houston, and I think next week is going to go beat New England.
Yeah.
Those three teams, if I'm right, will all be 2-1 against each other. And then the Patriots, team everyone's afraid of, if I'm right and Kansas City goes and beats them, will be 0-3 against those three teams in the AFC that really matter. And the reason that I do think people are too far down on the Chiefs is we have seen it time and again with this team. When they play well, they can beat anybody. Buffalo right now is a better record than Kansas City, but Buffalo has a defined ceiling of what they can do.
Right.
Right? You know, Buffalo's best game cannot match up with the best game of the other best teams in the AFC. Kansas City's best game is still better than, I think, including Baltimore, anyone in the conference. The problem is, if they don't play their best game, or even if they play it like they did against Tennessee for 55 minutes and then don't at the very end, they can lose to just about anybody.
But we're all prisoners of the moment. We haven't seen Kansas City on a primetime game in a while. If they come back and blow New England out, we'll all be reminded how great they are. We'll be talking to them about them again, and you can be happy.
And Tyreek Hill and Mahomes, Tyreek Hill was hurt early. Mahomes was hurt in the middle.
Seven quarters.
They haven't had a ton of time together.
It is the single most dangerous quarterback wide receiver duo in football by far.
You hear that,
that's
Drew Brees?
What New England's going to have to deal with. Oh, sorry, Drew Brees, Michael Thomas. That's what New England's going to have to deal with next week.
You hear that, Freddie Kitchens? Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.